Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ohtani MVP, should the Dodgers trade for Kenley Jansen? When will Gavin Lux get this opportunity? The plan for Gavin Lux has been revealed. Gavin Lux had a big game yesterday. All that more coming up next here on Dodgers Dugout Live.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
Welcome to Dodger Stadium.
Dodgers win!
This is the golden age of Dodger baseball.
Grand slam!
It's a double for Freddie.
They're going to make big signings. They're going to make impact trades. This is the most anticipated season in Dodgers history.
Dodgers have won it all in 2020.
Think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.
What is up, Dodgers Nation? Doug McCain here, credential member of Dodgers Media. You can follow me on X and Instagram at DMAC_LA. Now, if you haven't yet, do us a huge favor and subscribe to the number one Dodgers YouTube channel, the number one show here on YouTube, Dodgers Dugout Live. Hit that subscribe button, hit that notification bell. And also, if you really want to do us a favor, hit that like button. Also, we're getting so close to 90,000 subscribers. And once we hit 90K, we're doing our next giveaway. And we have confirmed, we are giving away a brand new Tyler Glasnow authentic jersey. You're going to celebrate all the new Dodgers signings. So if you want to win a Tyler Glasnow jersey, the new ace of the Los Angeles Dodgers, comment Tyler Glasnow, like Cy Young, Tyler Glasnow. Comment that done down below as well. So if you commented done the past, you're also eligible. But Tyler Glasnow, that is your ticket to the giveaway. So definitely comment that. But of course, we start every episode of Dodgers Dugout Live with our poll question of the show. I asked you guys over on the X, who will win the National League MVP? And right now, 41% of you say Mookie Betts. 54% of you say Shohei Ohtani. 5% of you say other. Of course, I got my super producer, Mr. Tonio Taters, Tonio Two Bags, Antonio to my left. Who you got right now? You got Mookie, you got Ohtani. What's your pick, Antonio?
You know, I'm a big fan of what Ohtani's doing, but right now I'm going to stick with Mookie Betts for now.
Going Mookie Betts. How about you, Noel? We got our super social media superstar, Noel Sanchez. He's in the mix today. Noel, who's your pick?
Man, I got to agree with Tonio right here. As much as I love what Ohtani's doing, Mookie's been on a different level. He's the straw that stirs the Dodgers drink, per se.
I love it. I love it. And honestly, hey, it's a good problem to have. These are champagne problems, right? You have two MVP candidates. You have two of the best players in the league on the same team batting leadoff and in the two hole. So it's a great problem to have. But first, of course, let me know where you're representing Dodgers Nation from down below in the comment section. We got a jam-packed show. We're doing three up, three down, three things we like, three things we don't like. We got a big injury update. Kenley Jansen's name is surfacing once again. Gavin Lux, really good game for Lux yesterday, a big step in the right direction. But of course, we have to start. We have got to start with Shohei Ohtani. Now the comments are rolling in. We got Ed Hull from LA. Ed Hull says, Tyler Glasnow, is Kenley going to be available? Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Some rumors starting to percolate. We got Kelly over in the chat says, feels like Yamamoto gets Barnes a lot. Is that on purpose? He did a lot of the catching for him during spring training. If you're looking for a catcher that's going to optimize a strike at the bottom of the zone, you're going to have Austin Barnes. And you look at Yamamoto's splitter, you look at his curveball, working the edges, working the corners is definitely advantageous. But we'll talk some Yamamoto. We got Hello D-Mac. What up, Diane Schroeder? Javier Lopez from Northern Cali. We got Will W. Put Freddie back in the two spot. We got Madison, Wisconsin, baby. Stens. By the way, an afternoon game today. I love me some afternoon baseball. I love me some afternoon baseball. And you got Mackenzie Gore going up against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. The Dodgers going for the sweep today in Washington. It's going to be a monumental day for your Los Angeles Dodgers. A 105 Pacific first pitch, 15-11 Dodgers going up to Fighting Walgreenses, a.k.a. the Washington Nationals. So let's dive right into our first topic. So for the first up today, got our first up. Let's hit this. Actually down. There we go. Wait. So for our first up today, Shohei Ohtani. Got to start with Shohei Ohtani. The greatest show in baseball continues to play like an unreal player. This is a perennial MVP. He's a multi-time unanimous MVP winner. He's been better than advertised. To think that Shohei Ohtani, with all the hype surrounding him, signing a $700 million contract, the fact that he has been better than was ever expected just shows you that he has another gear he can get to. It shows you that playing for a competent franchise surrounded by more talent than just Mike Trout. Remember, it's not just the two Bugattis at the trailer park meme in Los Angeles. You have more talent around him. He is looking as locked in as he ever has. And guess what? Shohei Ohtani is known to get off to slower starts as far as how he produces in the summertime. So how's June Tani going to look? How's July Tani going to look? If this was just a 7.5, as Jose Mota told us a couple days ago, what does it look like when he's at a 10? And if you look at his numbers so far, a 371 batting average, that leads all of Major League Baseball, a 695 slug, that's first in Major League Baseball, an 1129 OPS, that's number one. 73 total bases, that's first. 14 doubles, that's first. 21 extra base hits, that's first. Heading into yesterday's game, in his 25 games for the Dodgers, he has 20 runs. He had 20 runs, 18 extra base hits, and 5 stolen bases. Before Ohtani, the last player to reach all those numbers in his first 25 games with the team was Barry Bonds with the Giants in 1993. That's from OptiStats. That tells you the kind of start he's having. If you look at his pace, he's on pace to hit 371, 37 home runs, 100 RBI, 31 stolen bases, 243 hits, 87 doubles, and 131 extra base hits, 454 total bases. So I think you'll start to see the home run pace go up a little bit, but 37 home runs, 31 stolen bases. What I say before the season, for Ohtani to win the MVP as a DH, he would have to do something special. What is special? Becoming a 40-40 player. Only a handful of guys have done that in the history of this sport. So if the stolen base number goes up a little bit, which it can, if the home run number goes up a little bit, which it will, we could be looking at a 40-40 season. Now, the one number where he's not first in the league, where he's not first in Major League Baseball, is the WAR number. He has a 1.7 B WAR right now. That's fifth. Who leads the league? It's Marcus Lynn Betts. Mookie Betts, who has the most WAR in the league. If the season ended today, Mookie Betts, he wins MVP. Obviously, we're just in April, okay, so let's not get too ahead of ourselves, but if the season ended today, that's Mookie Betts' award, and he would become the first player since Frank Robinson to take home MVP honors in two leagues. Now, when you look at Shohei Ohtani, the only reason why he wouldn't win MVP is you're not getting the defensive WAR numbers. You're not getting the pitching WAR numbers, right? Because technically, Ohtani is the only designated hitter to win the MVP award. He's the only one in Major League Baseball history to do that. But of course, the caveat there is that he was also pitching at an elite level. In his two MVP seasons, he had an OPS north of 950, and he had an ERA below 3.5. If you look at the history of the sport, David Ortiz had 5 top 5 finishes for the MVP award, and he was second in the MVP voting in 2005. But you never had an exclusive MVP win that award. But we mentioned the WAR numbers. He's at 1.7. He's on pace for an 8.5 to 9 WAR season. So he could absolutely win the MVP as a DH if you're putting up an 8.5 and 9 WAR season. Mookie Betts got off to an absolutely lava hot start. He was on a tear to start the season. He's still fantastic. Had a 4-hit game a couple days ago. He's still extremely productive. Makes you wonder, though, if he is playing shortstop the entire season And they're going to use this next 2 months to evaluate how does Mookie playing shortstop impact him at the plate. Who was saying that the whole time? This guy, right? And if those numbers start to slide, they are going to take that into consideration. Because Mookie, not only is he playing shortstop, the preparation level is completely different, right? I mean, he's taking ground balls just hours before the game. He's working overtime on the backhand, on the throws. And at some point, your legs are going to get impacted. So it makes you wonder, how was Mookie playing shortstop going to impact his offense? Because if Mookie puts up the numbers he's putting up right now and primarily plays shortstop at an average level, considering the narrative where the Dodgers need a shortstop and Mookie was plugged in, he got the job done, he's going to run away with the MVP award, okay? That award is going to be his. But look, it's a great problem to have. Champagne problems right now. You got two of the best players on the planet on the same team. And with Shohei Ohtani, I'm just going to say this. He is basically the offensive version of Sandy Koufax for the Dodgers, right? When Sandy Koufax was pitching for the Dodgers, there wasn't anyone on the planet that threw a baseball more effective and better than Sandy Koufax, right? I think that it's pretty clear at this point, Shohei Ohtani, there's no doubt, but he's the most talented player to ever play this sport when you consider offense and what he can do on the mound. I think he goes down as the best individual player the Dodgers have ever had, and I don't even think it's going to be that close at the end, just because it's so effortless. The way he can slug to all fields, lefties and righties, covers all parts of the plate. He hits rocket shots at such a prolific rate. Take a little home run. Boom! Just look at that home run shot. That ball is still in orbit. Has that ball landed? I mean, he's just disrespecting baseballs all season long. And he's the most feared hitter in baseball since Barry Bonds. And I see people out there saying, okay, this is peak Barry Bonds. And as much as I love Shohei Ohtani, Noel, people criticize me saying I always glaze Ohtani. I mean, I'm just trying to keep it real, right? I mean,
you can't help it.
I mean, he's elite. He's as advertised. And I know, look, I'm Ohtani's number one fan, of course. You know, Shohei Ohtani. That's the, you know, I called my shot a couple years ago and it came through, right? But he's not peak Barry Bonds, okay? 2004 Barry Bonds was the best hitter the sport has ever seen. And that was the best sport that hit, the best hitter the sport will ever see. Okay. And of course, he was roided out of his gourd. His hat size was like 9 2/4 at that point. And yeah, look at this stat for Barry Bonds. In 2004, this is the most ridiculous stat in baseball history. In 2004, Barry Bonds reached base more times than he had at bats. He had 129 hits and 373 at-bats with 232 walks. And he got hit by a pitch 9 times and reached on error 6 times. He reached base 373 times. And that was in 376 times and 373 at-bats. So he reached base 376 times and 373 at-bats. Only 3 players that year had more walks than he had intentional walks. He was intentionally walked 120 times. So there's my piece on Shohei Ohtani. Shohei is unbelievable. Just savor it. I mean, this is a guy that you're going to tell your grandkids that you saw play live. He is just unbelievable at the plate, and he's only going to get better. Okay, so my first down of the day is down as in, are you down with the Dodgers trading for Kenley Jansen? John Heyman in the New York Post, he wrote, Kenley Jansen is the one that comes to mind. He was a longtime Dodger, started with the Dodgers, doesn't seem really in place right now with the Red Sox. The Red Sox have a winning record right now. Doesn't look like they're trying to win that division. I think he'd be happy to be traded at this point. I know he went to Boston figuring they would be a team that would contend. He got a very good contract. So Boston, if they do trade him, probably have to pay a little bit of that contract. To me, he's a guy who could be on the move, and that would make sense for the Dodgers. So once again, Kenley Jansen, old friend Kenley. Kelly says no, Jansen. Nick says, bring back Jansen. So some mixed reviews. You got, let's go get Jansen. Chris says, this has got to be one of the most polarizing players. Evan Phillips is still better than Jansen. Alex PBG, there's no doubt about that right now. But you guys know how I feel about Kenley Jansen. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's the Kenley Fournier adventure, right? You never know what you're going to get. And you never want to reheat the McDonald's French fries. But desperate times call for desperate measures. Someone said, no, my blood pressure just went up. No, no, Jansen. Yeah, keep firing with those Kenley Jansen takes, because here's the thing. Here's the rub on Kenley Jansen. Yes, he had his ups and downs towards the end of his time with LA. Towards the end against the Braves in that postseason series in 2021, he was absolutely lights out. The fastball velocity last season was up. The velocity on the cutter was up. The strikeout rate was right there. And you look at Kenley Jansen this season, and look, is it peak Kenley Jansen? No, it's not. You're not going to see Kenley Jansen when he was the best closer in baseball. He's not walking through that door at this point of his career. But this season, with the Boston Red Sox, 8 games, he has 5 saves. He has a 14.09 strikeouts per 9. So 33.3 strikeout rate. That's up from 27.7%. The walk rate is sky high, though, at 22% walk rate. The batting average against is low at 148. Batting average against the BABIP at 267. You look at some of his expected numbers, a 4.8 expected FIP, a 235 ERA. The cutter velocity is actually down this season. But look, Kenley Jansen could help this team if, one, you not have to give up any premier prospects, which you would not have to. Two, the Boston Red Sox pay down a good portion of that $16 million in that deal. Or let's say you go after Kenley Jansen later in the year and you're looking to trade for an outfielder. Maybe Tyler O'Neill becomes a part of that deal and you absorb a little more of that contract because it's a multiplayer deal that includes Kenley Jansen and Tyler O'Neill. Now, with Andy Páez emerging, I definitely want to see what I have in Andy Páez right now. So I'm not quick to do that. But it's very interesting because, yeah, a couple weeks ago I would have said, yeah, look, I'm done with Kenley Jansen. He's definitely a legend of Dodger baseball. There's no doubt about that. But yesterday, Dave Roberts had an update on Bruzdar Gratterall, who was originally supposed to be back towards the end of May. May 18th was the earliest he could return. So you're optimistic that hopefully the bazooka could be back. And he was one of the Dodgers' best relievers last season. Bruzdar Gratterall was fantastic in 2023. He had a 1-2 ERA. He had a sub-1 whip. He was great in 68 games. Bruzdar was emerging. But yesterday, Dave Roberts told reporters that Gratterall has stopped his throwing program due to his arm remaining sore, and that it's going to be a long program to get him back. So a long program, a longer process. This is not good news. If the Dodgers are being as forthright about this with this information, that tells you it's going to be a long road to recovery for Bruzdar Gratterall. We might not see him back in the Dodgers bullpen until July. Now, I know some people criticize Bruzdar as far as, oh, what did he do in the offseason? Did he not prepare the right way? Is he someone that uses the regular season to get into game shape? I don't think that necessarily is the case. I think Bruzdar Gratterall, the same issues with him are the ones we heard when there was issues when the Dodgers originally traded for him in his medicals, and that his shoulder has been viewed as almost a ticking time bomb, right? If you look at his motion, just a short, quick motion, doesn't have a big extension, just kind of flings it, and you're looking at 100 miles per hour. So you're not going to have bazooka back for months. So if you were to trade for Kenley Jansen, if you did that, you can move Evan Phillips into that high leverage role. And if you did that, you would have an elite fireman. And then you put Kenley Jansen in a situation where, yeah, you see how he does in the regular season, if he's good enough to play in the postseason, you go that route. But I do think that we're at a point with the Dodgers where even if you don't go out there and trade Kenley Jansen, I'm not pounding my fist saying, oh, go get Kenley Jansen. I'll drive to the airport and pick him up. You have to trade for Kenley. I'm just saying it's not the worst idea in the world. And let me tell you this, the Dodgers were legitimately they were legitimately interested in trading for Kenley Jansen before the season. There were talks between the Dodgers and the Red Sox. Nothing materialized. But one thing I can tell you about the Dodgers organization is if they're interested in you at any point, if they're showing any interest, that usually means that if you become available or the leverage goes down, the price goes down on you, that they've already kind of identified you as a potential target, that they're going to be interested again, right? They're interested in Mookie Betts for a long period of time, right? That's how this organization runs. So if they are interested in Kenley, that tells you that they think Kenley can provide value because they're probably assuming the Red Sox will pay down a good portion of that $16 million contract and that, hey, they brought Kike back. They brought a lot of these guys in the fold here. Kershaw's back, right? So there is still a direct lineage from that era of Dodger baseball, and they're comfortable. They understand what he brings. I mean, look, before they traded for Kimbrel a couple years ago, had Kenley waited and the Dodgers would have found some time to get that $16 million and that money together, he could have already been a Dodger. So I'm just trying to tell you that is kind of the mindset of this organization when it comes to Kenley Jansen. But I want all your Kenley takes down below. Donio, you want to see Kenley Jansen back in Dodger blue?
I mean, he's got all those saves in Dodger history. Obviously, we had all those heart attack games for sure, but
cardiac Kenley,
you know, right? But you know what? I wouldn't mind seeing him come back. You know, I'm sure. I don't think he'll be the closer. He'll probably just come in here and there, but I'd like to see him come back.
I mean, alcohol sales in LA will just jump. I mean, if he can go back and be effective, here's the thing. If he comes back and he's not effective, they'll move off of him, right? But this is not something that's imminent. It's just something that was reported when it comes to John Heyman. I do think the big takeaway in all of this is you're going to have to look externally for at least maybe one, possibly two bullpen pieces. Ryan Brazier had a better showing yesterday. Michael Grove is trending in the right direction. Vessi is trending up as well. But I think this is the year where with the offenses stacked as it is, Pajes emerging. You could add another outfield bat. I definitely think you could. You could get a shortstop if one becomes available and they want to go that direction at the deadline. Willy Adames, right? But I think this is the year where you target a bullpen piece, the Tanner Scotts, those types, Kenley Jansen, if that makes sense. So I think that is kind of the number one takeaway in all this, that I think the Dodgers are going to be looking to look externally for a veteran, tried and true bullpen piece that can step up in the postseason, a guy that has some experience in that department. So let me read your Kenley takes, what you got. No, we got to get younger, not older, but just 1 year, not even a full season. And look, that's how bullpen pieces are. They're very volatile from year to year. Do you think Pajes holds on to a starting job for the rest of the year? I'm talking Andy Pajes next, so hold on to that thought. Here's my guy. We got Alex. Trade deadline is a must for Andrew Friedman. Kenley Jansen only for middle reliever. That's from Dodgers Z Showtime. I think if you brought in Kenley, you have to have him as your closer just because that's the area where he's comfortable at. And then you actually will get more value out of Evan Phillips because then you don't have to just say, okay, he's our ninth inning guy. Sometimes in the ninth, you're not facing the top of the order. You're getting clean innings, right? A lot of times the game is won or lost before the ninth inning. Most of the time it's won or lost before the ninth inning. That's why high leverage relievers are more valuable because you can throw them in situations with runners on base and you can come out there and be that lights out high leverage guy that I think this team lacks. I don't think Daniel Hudson has been really good. I love what Huddy's been able to do. He's given up some home runs. Brazier was really good as well. And I think those guys are going to be high leverage guys, especially Trust Hudson as long as he's healthy. But having Evan Phillips, a true top 10 guy in that situation, I think it would really solidify this bullpen. Ray Vessia and Lux up for a trade. Jansen, 4 World Series blown saves. Justin Lombis. But here's the thing. You might not see him in the World Series, right? I mean, you have to prove at that point. You're going to get, Dustin May could be back and he could have a role in this bullpen. Emmett Sheehan could have a role in this bullpen, right? You just need depth. You need depth. What's Needham Fuhr up to these days? T-Bone 805. That's a nice pull. We'll give you a fire take for that fire one. Fire. Oh, wait. The buttons are back. Shout out to Antonio killing the game. Dodgers fans enough. Ohtani is the MVP period from Lin Ho. Jay Yeah, bullpen needs Phil Bigford. How's Phil Bigford doing these days? Otani equals closer mood swing. Wouldn't that be awesome? Can you imagine Shohei coming out, game 7 of the World Series, getting that final out, striking out someone like he did Mike Trout in the WBC? That would be absolutely electric. Chris Frosaker, probably butchered that last name. Instead of MV3, put Will Smith in the convo, the Fantastic Four. No, we have a name for it, right? It's the Mount Crushmore, I thought. Emmanuel Clase instead of Jansen. Here's the thing, though. The Guardians, they're a surprise team. They're playing well. Ray, so sick of the bullpen games. Yeah, it's not fun. I agree with that. I predict the MVP will be Betts and the World Series MVP will be Ohtani. There is a slight possibility that Yoshinobu Yamamoto will be Rookie of the Year. BL Boyd, D-Mac, please do not be fooled by a couple of Gavin Lux singles. The guy has zero pop in his bat. Rojas needs to be the starter at shortstop. Yeah, no. I mean, look, we posted that reel the other day where I advocated for what you're saying. Move Miguel Rojas back to the shortstop spot. You move Mookie Betts to second. Got tons of likes. I was checking Gavin Lux's Twitter to see if he had unfollowed me. I thought he was going to unfollow me, Noel, so I kept checking his Twitter. But it's not anything against Gavin Lux. I am a big fan of Gavin Lux. There would be nothing more that I would like to see than Gavin Lux succeed, because he's a young, controllable star. You have some more years of team control with Lux, and that's what this team needs to sustain the excellence, right? So, I mean, how about the four Crushketeers? No, that's not going to work. Matt, hopefully the Dodgers have turned the Pajes on their bottom of the lineup problems. Now, that's a fan of the show. Shout out to Matt. So, let's talk some... Let's go up again, and let's talk some Gavin Lux. Let's talk some Gavin Lux here. You know, let's do a Let's Go Dodgers. Something goes hard. Up is Gavin Lux. So Gavin Lux, like you mentioned, two hits yesterday, one of them coming in a big situation where the Dodgers were up just 4-2 at that point. He gets the base hit. They add two runs and make it 6-2. Gets a base hit later in the game. Sunday, he reached base twice after drawing two walks, and he had headed into yesterday's game, 5 for his last 43, hitting 116. And yesterday, he came through in some big spots. And you see what happens with this Dodgers lineup when it gets length. When the bottom of the order steps up and has some production, it allows Mookie to get to the plate with opportunities to generate runs. It puts runners on base for Ohtani and Freddie Freeman. And that's what I said yesterday. Look, he can be the Dodgers' good luck charm in that he gets on base, he uses his speed, he scores runs. Would you like to have more doubles out of him? Yes. Would you like to have more home runs out of him? Yes. A couple years ago, he was right at the top when it came to triples, right? Would you like to have that? Yes. But at the very least, just get on base and give the top of the lineup opportunities. Turn over this lineup, and that is what's most important for this team. Now, as far as Lux, he talked to reporters yesterday, and he had some very interesting things to say as far as his journey and just making it back and some of the struggles that he's had. And he mentioned the fact that he said all the effing rollovers. He said that he puts a lot of pressure on himself. He said, my swing doesn't feel bad. I'm seeing the ball fine. I don't feel sped up. It's just the actual hit part is a little off. Now, this is from The Athletic in Fabian Ardaia, who spoke to some of the Dodgers hitting coaches, and Aaron Bates told him he'll put pressure on himself or try to do too much at times, I think. It's about not getting too big picture too fast. I think that's where he gets in trouble. Lux's swing is built around his lower half, transferring his weight from his back leg to his front one and sticking that leg into an almost through the ground to lock it out and generate force. Bates compared it to a whip, with the front leg serving as the fulcrum to the rest of the body. Doing so, however, essentially sends that energy directly through where he has a scar on his right knee. Now, if you saw the interview with Jose Mota a couple days ago, he was saying the same exact thing. And Lux said, I just got to get my brain to say, F it. It's fine. Just go. Turn it and burn it because it's fine. We're working on that, just trying to get over that hump. You have to go effing find a way to still perform when your brain's still telling you to be safe. So that tells me right there that he's still trying to get over some of these mental hurdles. And I don't think it's a yips thing. I think it's just a confidence thing, okay? It's traumatic to suffer a massive knee injury and then be thrusted into a situation where you're expected to be the shortstop for a team that has the highest expectations in the history of Major League Baseball, right? So that's not an envious spot for a player that's still trying to figure things out at the big league level. But the most important thing that Lux has right now is he has the organization behind him. When I spoke to Andrew Friedman in Korea and we talked about this, he made it very clear that Gavin Lux is going to get that opportunity at second base, and then they're going to reevaluate things after the season. So that tells me that they want to see what he can do offensively. And defensively, he's been a bright spot. He has been an above-average second baseman. He's looked excellent at second base, so check that box off. It's just, can you get on base? Can you hit the ball with more regularity? Can you get some pop in that bat and get those legs adjusted and get that confidence back and start producing? Because Dave Roberts told reporters yesterday, when it comes to the plan, he said, I don't think that would be fair to anyone, to be quite honest, to remove Gavin Lux from his spot right now or make any drastic changes as far as putting Miguel Rojas back at shortstop and Mookie back at second. He said that Lux is going to get at least 150 plate appearances, if not more, to figure it out. Now, who has said that this whole entire season? Me. Before the season started, I said they're going to give Lux 150 to 200 plate appearances. Then they're going to address it. Then they're going to assess it. So we're not even halfway there, right? We're not even halfway there. So when you're watching these games, every time Gavin Lux at the plate, pay close attention to how he performs. And if he can figure it out, great. If he can't, they're going to look a different direction. So don't get too caught up in saying trade Lux now. They're not going to trade him right now, because his stock is low, his value is low, and they haven't gotten the full assessment, the full Gavin Lux experience. And who knows, if things start to click for him, he can be an asset to this offense. And he definitely had a big step in the right direction yesterday. Now, what does he need to do differently? Well, you know, he hasn't barreled one ball up all year. He's in the one percentile when it comes to barrel percentage. If you look at the ground ball percentage, from this season to back in 2024, it's up from 48.9% to 56%. So he's hitting too many balls on the ground. He needs to lift the baseball. You need to see more line drives. In 2022, the line drive percentage was at 21.6%. This year, that number is down to 14%. If you remember in 2020, when he struggled, that number was at 13.6%. So when Gavin Lux struggles, it's when he doesn't have a line drive type mindset at the plate. One-eyed dragon, you said it best and simply right there. And I like that. You hit, you play. It's that simple. If he hits, he will play. And he gets on base, he will be in the lineup. At the moment, you're seeing him primarily against righties. That's when he's going to start. Occasionally against lefties, but really they've been going with Rojas in those situations. And as David Vasse on AM570 reported a couple days ago, the organization, they're a little reluctant to put Rojas back at shortstop because of his age, right? 35, going to be 36 years old. And for a shortstop with the wear and tear at that position, they think maybe he'll get worn down or he'll get injured. Well, if you think that for him, you should think that for Mookie, who's at 31. So that's kind of where I have an issue with that. But good thing for Gavin Lux. I'm happy for him. He had a good offensive day. Takes more than one game to get into a slump. Takes more than one game to get out of a slump. But how about this? Old friend Manny Machado gave Gavin Lux some advice on how to recover. He told Lux in the Gavin Lux said, Padres third baseman Machado, who had to work through major knee injuries at the start of his career, made a point this spring to seek out Lux and let him know that all. He said, Padres third baseman Manny Machado, who had to work through major knee injuries at the start of the career, made it a point this spring to seek out Lux and let him know that it'll take some time to be fully healed from the surgery. So how about that? Manny Machado. Don't make us like Manny Machado, right? No, honestly, he's a good dude. I told you a couple weeks ago, I was at Dodger Stadium. Manny Machado signed more autographs for a longer period of time than any player I've ever seen at Dodger Stadium. But that's a cool story and definitely is probably something big. I actually saw that moment happen. It was during spring training when Manny came over and talked to Gavin Lux. So look, if Lux figures it out, great. If it doesn't, they have options. You got Rojas, You got external options. You can move things around. So they're going to be fine. But what you need to look for is, does he hit? Does he get on base for the next month and a half, 2 months? And that will ultimately determine his role for the next half of the season. Now, next down. We're going to hit it down next. Yamamoto needs to find his fastball. So Yoshinobu Yamamoto, he's on the mound today. And opponents are hitting 355 off his heater, slugging 710 with a 655 expected slug. You look at the other pitches, they're hitting 212 off his curveball, 115 off his splitter. Those are elite numbers. Those pitches are right at the top when it comes to curveball and splitter effectiveness. Now, if you look at the effectiveness and the location of Yoshinobu's fastball to righties, look, it's a lot of middle-middle. It's a lot of center cut. It's a lot of right down Broadway, and that is where opponents are doing damage. And I think what he needs to do is, you can't be married to that four-seam fastball if you're not working it up in the zone and you're not locating it, because that's really the problem, is that fastball is leaking out over the middle of the plate, and he's not able to spot it at the top of the zone. And that's been Yamamoto's calling card, is he has pristine command, and he can put the ball wherever he wants it on every pitch. He hasn't been able to do that so far with that fastball. Is it the size of the baseball? Is it just adjusting to Major League Baseball and the hitters and the fact that they're more likely to do damage than MPB hitters? I'm not sure what it is, but what I do know is that the numbers will tell you that opponents are looking for that fastball because they know the other stuff is filthy. They know that splitter is nasty. They know that curveball, the rainbow curveball, is nasty. And you look at his last start, 4 of his 7 hits were off that fastball against the New York Mets. He gave up the home run to Stewart. That was on a four-seam fastball. Bader, single four-seam. Marte, double four-seam. Bader, ground rule, double. That was a four-seam fastball. So they know that when they're sitting on a fastball, they're going to swing at it. And yes, he's throwing 95, but Major League hitters, they can time a bullet. And if they're on that pitch, they're going to do damage. So I want to see him get back to that two-seam fastball, that sinker that we saw in the MPB, where you can get it in on the hands against right-handed hitters. You can front hip it to lefties. So that's the big key. Yamamoto needs to spot that heater, spot that fastball, locate it, then he's going to level up. Then he's going to level up, and we're going to start talking about the rookie of the year. Because the splitter, I mean, he's already proven that he can embarrass big league hitters. You look at the strikeout numbers, north of 30%. The walk rate is pristine. It's just missing with that fastball out over the plate and not being able to get it up in the zone. That's really been his problem area. So look out for that today. I like that Ray Bob says location, location, location. Yes, pitching is just like real estate. Location, location, location. We got Nando in this chat down below. What's up, Nando? We got Nando says, the only thing missing from Yoshi is consistent command. Give him time. Hepatitis C layer says, off-season agenda for Yamamoto, develop a slider. Weird because he had one back in Japan and doesn't throw it anymore. I actually asked Yamamoto about his sweeper and if we were going to see more sweeper in the show, because you see more right-handed hitters in Major League Baseball than you do left-handed hitters, and there's more left-handed hitters in the NPB. And he really didn't want to give up his pitch mix or talk about his sequencing, but that's the question I had, is I want to see more sweeper, want to see more slider, and I certainly want to see more two-seam fastball. But I love watching his journey, and I'll end the Yamamoto chat with this. Let's not forget, he's a 25-year-old rookie. Just because he signed the largest contract for any pitcher at $325 million doesn't mean he shouldn't get the same amount of time to figure things out as any other rookie. So look, I think I'll take the signs of greatness that we've seen, right? And then I'll live with the fact that he has room to grow, and that is improving the effectiveness and the command on that fastball. But what up, D-Max, streaming from vacation in Hawaii? Drew, that's where Otani's new pad's going to be, right? A mansion in Hawaii. Yama didn't win the Japanese Cy Young for no reason. Yeah, he won 3 Sawamura Awards, the Japanese equivalent to the Cy Young. By the way, if you want to win a Tyler Glasnow jersey, comment Siler Glasnow down below. Carnivorous Lunar Activity, Yamamoto is tough mentally. He's learning. Absolutely. He's very tough mentally. Smash that like button for DMAC. Appreciate that. The fairy godmother Diana Schroeder. Diane Schroeder. Sorry about that, Dan. BC, teams hitting 268. It jumped to 298 without their worst four performers over the last 10 at-bats. That's from BC. Mike M., Dodgers pitchers have a problem with too many walks and home runs. I mean, really. Salute, D-Mac. When we get in, Shoey. L. Boogie. Look, let's do a Shoey tomorrow. I haven't done one in a while. I promise a Shoey tomorrow. I'm gonna use Noel's Jordan 4s. Okay? Okay, I'm going to use Air Force Ones. And maybe Tonio's checkerboard van slip-ons. So, yeah. No, I'm going look. Yoshino, how about this? Look, if Yoshinobu Yamamoto has six strikeouts or more, you're getting the Shoey. Yoshinobu Yamamoto. I mean, the over-under is like 5.5. You're going to be just fine. So you're going to see a Shoey tomorrow. Good luck, Yamamoto. Damn. Seems like Yamamoto is still... but that means I'll have to sleep here because I can't drive after. Well, there's Uber. All Uber. Hollywood to South Pasadena, California. Siler Glasnow from Alex PPG. Kelly, Siler Glasnow. Okay, we got our next up right here. And that is Andy Páez. Andy Páez has been outstanding so far in his opportunities. He had three hits yesterday, a double, a single, and his second home run as a Los Angeles Dodger. He's had 29 plate appearances. He's hit two home runs in those plate appearances. He's hitting 259, 310, slugging 593 with a 150 weighted runs created plus. And what makes Andy Páez so impressive is the barrel control, the fact that anytime he's making contact, he's hitting the ball hard. He has a 16.7% barrel percentage, a 50% sweet spot percentage. His expected slug is 545. His expected wOBA is 365. Look, if you don't know what those numbers mean, all that matters is those are elite hitting numbers, okay? And I think his sprint speed in the 84th percentile in sprint speed. And when you see a talent like this, he's got to stay up. He has got to stay up. Let's see this Andy Páez home right there. Boom! I love the way this guy gets down. I mean, compact. Also, this is someone who lifts the ball at a prolific rate. You talk about the difference between him and James Outman. James Outman is hitting a lot of balls on the ground. Páez has this uncanny ability to lift the baseball. He lifts the baseball, and he doesn't strike out at an extremely high clip. Yes, 9 strikeouts, and he hasn't drawn a walk yet, so you want to see him increase the walks. Did get hit by a pitch a couple games ago, but I've seen enough. Andy Páez should be here to stay. I don't want to see a Michael Busch situation where some of the great hitters in the minor league system get traded and raked for other franchises. I want to see him get the runway similar to what Miguel Vargas got. Yes, it was a different year. You had the youth movement, but they let Miguel Vargas get tons and tons of plate appearances before they made a decision on him, right? And it's different because Vargas came into the season with a very specific role at second base. He ended with 256 at-bats last season, 304 plate appearances. But Andy Páez could help this team in such a major way because he provides pop at the bottom of that lineup. He has the best outfield arm in the organization. So I think that is what I'm looking at. And it's not a Chris Taylor situation. Look, I got news for you. The organization, they're not going to DFA Chris Taylor. I'd be shocked. Just talking to people, just his place in the clubhouse, it's very unlikely. But then you got Jason Hayward, who's had a setback. So Jason Hayward has had a setback. He's not even throwing a baseball. He's not anywhere close to being where he needs to be from a health standpoint. Is he getting the Adrian Gonzalez treatment? I don't know really what the deal is with that. Moose 1032 said on the show yesterday that he thinks that Hayward's almost getting phantom IL'd to give Páez this extended runway. But Dave Roberts said yesterday that Hayward is still experiencing residual soreness and isn't yet swinging a bat. So that tells you right there, it's going to be a lot longer than expected for Jason Hayward. But even if Jason Hayward comes back, I think it becomes a decision. Do you pick between James Outman and Andy Páez? Let's not forget, Andy Páez is a center fielder. So there's a lot of pressure on some of these guys. And I think James Outman goes 0-for-5 yesterday. He's hit the ball hard at times, just hasn't seen the results. He needs to lift the baseball more and be a little more line drive centric with his approach at the plate. But look, either way, I don't care how you find him on this roster. If you have to Phantom IL, a CT3, well, I don't care what you do, but you have to give Andy Paz an opportunity to go through a slump, let pitchers adjust to him to see if he can adjust back. Because if he can adjust back and he can hit like this and do damage like this, you got yourself an impact hitter at the big league level, not just for this year, but next year when the Dodgers need outfield pieces. And they also have to evaluate him to see if they want to go out there and make a trade for an outfielder at the deadline. So this is absolutely crucial right now for the Dodgers. So look, like I said, turn the Páez, like you said down below, I totally agree. Andy Páez is here to stay. He could be the present and the future for this Dodgers outfield. Alex PPG, Lux is trending in the right direction. Defense at second base is better than average, and his bat is starting to come around. Yeah, what you want to look for with Lux is two things. One, is he going to start lifting the ball more? You're going to see less ground ball outs. And two, you're going to start to see some extra base hits. Are you going to start to see more multi-hit games? I mean, yesterday, first multi-hit game in a long time. So, yeah, trending in the right direction. Can he build on that? We'll see. And from a mental standpoint, when is it all going to click? Because you got to feel for the guy. He's not 100% trusting that knee at the moment. But we're going to wrap things up, guys. You got the game starting in 10 minutes. 10 minutes. You got the NFL draft. Tomorrow, I think we'll talk about the top five draft picks in Dodgers history. Spoiler alert, Clayton Kershaw. That's going to do it for this episode of Dodgers Dugout Live. My name is Doug McCain. You can follow me on X and Instagram at DMAC underscore LA. Always give it up for super producer, Mr. Antonio, to my left. We're still looking for that perfect nickname. He wants Donio in the nickname. So anything you got, people throwing out T-Money, Donio, Taters, anything you got, definitely drop those down below. A couple of walk-off shots before we head out. We got Dan. As soon as the Dodgers release CT, the Giants will pick him up and he'll be a star. That feels very Dodgers-like. We got some Go Lakers, probably aimed at Noel over there. But, yep, guys, who's going deep, too? Real quick, who's hitting a home run for the Dodgers? I got to go Shohei. I think Shohei's going to obliterate another one. It's going to hit the International Space Station. Who you got, Noel?
Home run today?
Yeah.
I'm going Mookie.
He's going Mookie Betts. Who you got, Donio?
Is Chris Taylor in the lineup?
Chris Taylor is in the lineup starting in.
He's in the seventh spot.
You know, Páez is actually up in the order today.
Oh.
I'm going Roy Estrada. I'm going to throw in that. I think Páez goes deep again, too. I think Páez goes deep again, forces the issue, stays on this team. But that's going to do it for this episode of Dodgers Dugout Live. If you haven't yet, do us a huge favor. Noah, who's your pick for home run today? Shohei Ohtani from Noah Camrys, the lead editor here at Dodgers Nation. Go follow him at Noah Camrys. But that's going to do it for this episode. Let me know down below all your takes on today's topics. Should they trade for Kenley Jansen? Should they move Andy Páez permanently up and keep him higher in the lineup? Let me know down below in the comment section. Like I said, if you haven't yet subscribed to the number one Dodgers YouTube channel, number one show here on YouTube, Dodgers Dugout Live, and comment Siler Glass now if you want to be eligible for our next giveaway. We're giving away an authentic Tyler Glass now jersey once we hit 90,000 subscribers, and we are closing in. But that's going to do it. Remember, nothing brings us together quite like Dodger baseball. And until next time, think blue, bleed blue, and I'm out.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.